Well, you look at that. The Yankees just messed around and won four straight.
Oh,
I heard that.
yeah, I was trying to sweep.
It's like sweep with a bat.
With a baseball bat, right?
Yeah, I have to say, no matter how this came to be, and we talked about this off air, I don't care. All I care about and all anybody's going to care about in September is that this was a win. That's all anybody's going to care about. And it wasn't just a win. They swept a good Nationals team that was above 500 coming into the series. That was the number one offense coming into the series. So they really, in my opinion, they did a nice job. And it wasn't an easy ride. But they came through late in games. And yes, we can point to the bullpen. And that's obviously fair. That's where most of those hits came from. But at the end of the day, the Yankees had 9 hits, 8 hits, right? They hit when it mattered. In the final box score, the Yankees had more runs than the Nationals did, and they have as many or more hits than the Nationals
did. What
did
we do with runners in scoring position, by the way, Jake?
Oh, runners in scoring position, they were 3-for-6. So Jazz came through, you know, Wells came through, and Rice came through. So, yeah.
Love to see that.
Yeah, it was really what you want to see. The Caballero pickoff, that's not what you want to see. The Jazz Chisholm error wasn't what you want to see, but you know what? It's baseball. Ben Rice, he didn't get his home run today, but he got his
triple. I don't know if it's baseball. It's our baseball.
It's baseball. Jazz is really good defensively. Like, he doesn't normally have plays like that. So
I would say that I agree with you on Jazz.
Mm-hmm.
I don't agree with you on Jose Caballero. Jose Caballero.
No, he gets picked off a lot.
And Jazz Chisholm on the base pass, both those players. Jazz got picked off like 3 or 4 days ago looking at his batting gloves. Jose Caballero's been picked off and thrown out. I mean, how many times has he been thrown out and caught stealing this year? And I know that he's already described as this over-aggressive player that is high risk, high reward. We can live with that. But then in games that are one-run games, it's almost like, can we live with it? He's a tough player to watch in close games. So
that was pick on Jose, a bad moment.
It was a bad moment. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a bad moment. I'm not going to go as far as to say he's tough to watch in close games because, I mean, he's been the solution far more than he's been the problem.
With the other stuff, for sure. It's just the base running is really what I'm getting at.
He's not as good of a base runner as he was last year. I'll be the first one to tell you that. I think he was much better. Even when he first came in the Yankees, it felt like he's stealing 2 bags a game. Felt like he had better feel. This year, I don't know. He's still great. There's no doubt about it. He's still capable of stealing anything. But he seems more jumpy. Like, I think last year, and obviously this is just the eye test. I'm not using facts to back this up. I don't even know how I would back it up. But it just feels like the eye test shows you, at least for me, that he's a little more hesitant. Like, you see that secondary lead, he's like bouncy more on the base pass. So I felt like
Volpe
last year
does,
he was
Volpe
more
does the jumping
direct,
lead, right? And
I hate it.
The jumping lead works from second base. Much more difficult to steal from second to third base. But from first to second, that's reaction. There's not really a reason to be jumping off of first base. And
it's stupid.
Today, Michael Kay was like, and he's going to be out. The ball hadn't even got to first base yet. That's how out he was. So...
yeah,
don't mean to complain, but I think, I don't know if it's a Boone thing, if this is an assistant thing, a first base coach type of deal, because obviously there's a lot of communication that goes there. But when we get into September and October, the Yankees are going to have to figure out their base running and just shore it up a little bit. Jazz is going to have to dial it back as far as aggressiveness. I know he got hit. I can't really say where
he was. To be fair, he basically won a game by moving from second to third. So, I mean,
he absolutely did.
He has his moments. I would say with Caballero, Gary, I can't have, when a player's so good at something, like the way he is base stealing, I can have you getting thrown out second. I'm fine with that. I can have you getting thrown out third, as long as it's not the first or third out. I'm fine with it. What I can't have is you getting picked off, because there's no, it's not like, oh, high risk, high reward. It's like, no, you didn't. It's like right before you were about to gamble, someone kidnapped you and you didn't have a chance to gamble. That's what that's like. It's like
there's no pressure on the defense. Like, when you put a ball in play on the ground, the other team has to field the ball, make basic mechanics. They have to play catch, all the things. But when you get picked off, there's not much that has to happen for you to be out. Essentially, every pitcher and first baseman are going to be able to make an accurate throw from about 30, 40 feet away.
My least favorite play difficult. In the game. I hate
pickoffs. It's not a great play.
I hate them. I don't even like when the Yankees do them. I hate pickoffs. I absolutely hate that part of the game.
So do you like it now that there's a limit of how many pickoffs
yes,
they can do?
Yes, absolutely. But I also like am not ignorant to the fact that it does take away the allure of a stolen base. It just does.
Yeah, I actually hate the rule. Not because I think it's bad for baseball, but because it's bad for me. I don't like looking up and have people say, I'm going to go 50-50 or I'm going to go 40-40. And we talk about 40-40 seasons like they're just as difficult today as they were.
No, we do a better job.
They're so different.
We do a good job. I think we almost go too far with the, well, 50 solo bases today ain't what it used to be, right?
50 is the new, honestly.
Billy Hamilton would have 150 stolen bases, and Ricky Henderson would have 200 in this era.
Yeah, Ricky Henderson would just, we sound like the Jordan guys. We're like, Jordan would drop 50 a night.
But we're actually right, though, to be fair.
Yeah, no,
we're
it feels 100% like we are. Right. Yeah. But yeah. Ironically, those Jordan guys also think they're right, so.
Hey, but we're actually right because this is, I mean, this is ridiculous. Think about Ricky Henderson. Yeah. Knowing that he can steal because the pitcher can't pick him off.
They can pick off unlimited times. And mind you, I'd taken people to baseball games before and they're like, he's thrown over four times in a row. When does he stop? And I'm like, well, technically he can just play catch all day.
Yeah. See, that's why I disagree with that needed to be taken out. It was ridiculous. I remember going to a game and I think it was Matt Garza. He threw over to first base because you could tell like he just didn't feel comfortable about the batter he was going up against. He had a no hitter going with the Cubs. And Garza just kept throwing to first because he walked the batter. So it's to disrupt the flow of the game. It's disrupt you as a batter because you get up there and you're right. You're all ready and everything. And then it's like that is so irritating. The only thing that's more irritating about pickoff throws as a fan, like a viewer, is being at the plate when they just keep throwing over. It's like, pitch me the damn ball.
Here I was thinking I'm at the plate and I'm the most important guy on the field. But yeah. Now it just seems like you have this cat and mouse game going on with the guy at first base. And I like the storyline, but it can't be the main storyline. And obviously they got rid of that. But Jake, I want to get to today's game. You and I said that Will Warren would be shelled. Ironically, after the first at bat, we both said James Wood was going to hit a home run. I think I blurted it out first.
Yes.
That was the most obvious home run I think I've ever seen.
We didn't win our $600, though, because Ben Rice and Jazz didn't come through.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like we were that close, but I want to give credit to Will Warren for getting out of a jam because
yes. I mean,
you keep in mind, you've got the bases loaded, nobody out, and you end up striking a guy that was a huge out to essentially build some momentum, and you get that line drive over to Ben Rice where he gets the guy. Not sure what Abrams is doing at first base. You're supposed to freeze on a line drive. Instead, he's just thought he was invisible and he takes off the second and we get ourselves an unassisted double play. That changed the entire momentum of the game and it kept Will Warren active in this game. So want to give him credit for making pitches when he had to. It was ugly, but he got it done. And again, I just don't know how critical we can really be of this Yankees offense because you're facing the worst bullpen in the game. I have to acknowledge it as a podcaster of this team. That's the reality. This isn't Francisco Rodriguez coming out and closing games. This isn't Mason Miller. This is Clayton Beter, Washington's closer. And we know Beter very well in this organization. But Jake, you still have to hit when guys go out there who aren't performing well. And the Yankees have done that. Jazz was clutch yesterday. Austin Wells has helped this team the past two or three days. So credit to him. The Yankees did just enough, and we mentioned this Yankees team has to sweep Washington in this series. We mentioned that. We have to do that. They do it, and finally, Jake, there's blood in the division. Tampa loses today in the finale to Seattle, so we're now just three games back in the American League East. My question now is for everyone in the room. What are the expectations for the second half, Yankees? We've got to figure out what is the rotation? We've got a bunch of guys, right? It's a good rotation, Jake. Really good.
Yes.
Cam Schlittler, Max Fried, who's hurt. Will Warren, is he a 4 or 5? Probably. Would you trust him pitching postseason games? Probably not. Ryan Weathers, same exact question. What really is he? What's his ceiling? Garrett Cole, coming back from Tommy John, where's he going to be in October? We don't know. Rodon hurt and Clark Schmidt hurt working his way back. And right now, this bullpen, Jake, and the trusted guys, it's Cruz, Hedrick, and Bednar. That's it. And we still don't know if Aaron Boone's going to make a definitive decision at shortstop that Jose Caballero is going to be the guy. So my question now is, what are the expectations for the Yankees? If you look back and say, is Ryan McMahon having the best year? Has Jose Caballero been given a leash to just play over Volpe? No. Did Volpe really play that well when he played? Not really. Jazz Chisholm's having one of the worst years of his career, if not the worst. Ben Rice is DHing more times than not because they want to get Paul Goldschmidt's glove in there. Austin Wells is the worst catcher in the big leagues. He's been helping us this week. So much has gone wrong with the Yankees, and yet, first half of the year, we're three games back in this division. You have to be feeling better now than you were 4 or 5 days ago, no?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And, you know, I texted you this, and I don't know how many people know this, but the Yankees finish, the first half 54-42. That is a win more and a loss less than last year's team. They were 53-43.
And they were red hot in September. So, to be fair,
yeah,
the clip that they've got to win games in September to get to 94 wins is still incredible. So let's give it credit for there. And also, worth noting, Tampa's schedule is very light in the second half. So those things are going to matter, Jake. And if you remember correctly, the Yankees' second half schedule last year was dismal. One of the easiest schedules you could ever see.
Well,
and the Yankees took care of
business. Not coming out of it.
Not coming out of it.
It was the Braves, the Blue Jays, the Phillies, Tampa, who they really never play well.
I'm talking the end of the second half. When you're going into September, we saw nobody.
Because it was Baltimore after they had their little run.
And we saw the White Sox.
They had their fun in the sun. They fired Hyde, and then they're like, Baltimore and Chicago. You could argue. I mean, the Yankees won 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 games in a row to end the year. Yeah. All of those games were against Baltimore and Chicago.
Everyone expected us to beat the brakes off those teams. You're in the middle of a pennant race playing teams that are, racing for the number one pick?
Minnesota was before them, and I know they struggled this year, which was weird, but...
Right, and I agree with this live chat, by the way, Jake. I want to put this up on screen.
Mm-hmm.
So Go Kinsman says, without major trades, we can't win the division.
Major trades.
I knew this was happening. This is where I'm at. The Yankees are still in a good spot, all things considered. Considering the fact they're getting so many poor performances from guys position player-wise, they should have high expectations for the second half. They just should. They should. And they should know that Doval eventually is being phased out. So my thing is this. We all know who needs to be replaced. You need a new catcher. Jazz Chisholm can't possibly be worse in the second half than he was in the first half with the total body of work. No way. They're going to get better performance out of a catcher than Austin Wells did in the first half, whoever they go get. Jake, it doesn't even really matter who that player is. It's going to be better than Austin Wells. It's going to be better than the Ollie Sanchez, right? It's going to be better than that group. So
half of his RBIs the last three games.
It's absurd, Jake.
It's like it's nuts. He finally realized, they could actually replace me. I should start hitting. Like, it's ridiculous.
I was going to say I almost feel bad because he's finally doing something and then they're going to end up replacing him. But you're not really judged off what you do in a short sample size right at the end. You're judged off your total body of work. And that's the way that this should always go for not just Wells, for Volpe, right? For Caballero, for any guy on this team. So it doesn't really matter if Wells hits between now and August because the correct decision, the sound mind, would get rid of the player because of the body of work. They've got to get Jeffers. They have to get Goodman. It's one of the two.
Yeah, it'll probably be one of the two. I don't actually know. Because, again, it's really, if the Twins are willing to trade Jeffers, the Yankees will get him. I still am not 100% sure the Twins will trade him. I think they're going to, but I'm not 100%. I can't sit here and say, as of July 12th, soon to be 13th, and about 7 minutes on my side of the world, I can't say with certainty like that Ryan Jeffers is going to be a Yankee, but I do feel like it's going to happen.
If he's traded, he's a Yankee.
Yes.
We're the most, we should like, be in theory the most aggressive team in the market. I said this yesterday. It's not about being the only team interested. Just because you're the loudest team in the room doesn't mean that player's on their way. But how often is Brian Cashman the loudest person in the room about a player? The last time I really heard him being the loudest was about Gerrit Cole. He was not shy. We're interested in that player. We're interested in that player. We're interested in Aaron Judge. And every player that they deliberately tell us, we're interested. Jazz Chisholm, interested in that player. And we're going full board for this player. They ended up landing that guy. But anytime we hear that they're kicking the tires, I don't know if we've heard kicking the tires land into anything.
No. I hate that term, actually.
You don't like kicking the tires? You just window shop?
I don't kick tires. That's pointless.
You're kicking tires on a new couch.
No, I'm actually sitting on a new couch. I'm not just kicking the tires on a new couch.
I'm actually going to buy one.
Yeah. I'm not just sitting there like, oh, wouldn't that be nice? No.
By the way, must be said because we got a super chat. Alex, I do appreciate you because I wanted to get this off anyway. Thank you for the five. He says, so the Yankees are undefeated since Gary got the OLED. I'm going to go ahead and blame June and July swoon on Gary for not getting it earlier. I told my wife.
Gary, but, what were you thinking? Well, hey, you know what? You have it now.
I do.
You have the rest of July. Then you have the rest of August and September. And then October.
I don't know what a loss looks like in OLED. So, sorry.
It's. I hope this continues. Could you? All right. Just for a minute here. Imagine the Yankees never lose another game with the OLED. I would actually be worried about your safety. If that got out, I feel like there'd be other teams' fans trying to go after you.
Yeah, it'd be a problem. I'd probably be on Barstool because, you know, they just wait to the last second until everyone gets it. And then they reach out to you.
Would be all over you. Be like, all right.
Hey, can we use your content? And then people would be like, sure, that'd be awesome to be on Barstool. And then they don't get paid at all.
Yeah.
But Alex, I do really appreciate it. Ninja with the two, he says opinions on Luke Pettit. So I believe he was drafted in the 8th round.
Yeah, big congratulations to him.
Congrats.
We'll see if he signs because, of course, it's not like other drafts where you're drafted and you're most likely 99.5% of the time you end up on
drafted,
that team.
Yeah, you're drafted, it's done. Right.
But with baseball, it's all like, well, we're going to sit down and decide. It's like, it's bizarre. But congratulations to Luke Pettit. It's an interesting pick. He's a two-way player. I don't think he's good enough to be a two-way player. I just don't. But
big surprise, no one really is except for...
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean,
one or two guys.
Who was the best two-way player prospect? That one dude that was drafted in the top five. He's not a two-way player anymore.
No.
Was it Caglione? No, it wasn't Caglione.
No, it definitely wasn't Caglione.
It was...
You talking about the righty? You're talking about the guy who was the lefty?
First baseman also pitched?
Yeah. I can't remember. It's not going to show up.
Was it Caglione? I actually think it was.
Was it?
It might have. Or was it? No. I think it was Caglione.
Yeah, I just don't remember that.
Yeah.
I don't know. But honestly, good for him. We want to. You're going to carve your own path. You don't. They don't just give you. Oh, you're Andy Pettit's son. Well, welcome into Major League Baseball. People don't care in the end. It's about performance. And
well, the story's cool because he blew out.
Great.
I mean, I don't love that. Once again, the Yankees drafted the guy who blew out his arm. But he blew out his arm, and then he kind of did the similar pivot Spencer Jones did. Mm-hmm. Aaron Judge, I think, because Aaron Judge at one point. I think he was trying to pitch or something. Anyway, I know Spencer Jones did this, like where he had a really bad injury and wasn't able to pitch anymore, so then he switched to full-time hitting. They're saying Pettit's a better pitcher, and they're saying that he's still likely to be a pitcher. So he hit, you know, I think it was close to 900-something OPS. So, I mean, he hit well, hit 313. But, yeah, we'll see what ends up happening. I wasn't thrilled about this draft. Just like going through and like, you know, reading, you know, all the different reports and everything. I understand that's what other people are doing. I like to do my own scouting. But I was not thrilled with the draft. We'll see what ends up happening, but a lot of arms, not enough bats, in my opinion. And
a lot of surprise.
I was very surprised. And I'm not going to make any bold claim.
You were surprised?
I was very surprised.
I'm not surprised at all. I think the Yankees know. They know how to draft arms. And so instead of saying we have enough arms, so let's, instead of drafting position players now, why don't we just continue to draft arms because we know how to do it? So I hear what you're saying because you're feeling like, well, clearly you guys need position players. We want young up-and-coming bats with hit tool. But Brian Cashman doesn't work that way. He just figures our strength is developing talent with Matt Blake, getting it into that whole umbrella of our pitching coaches down below, and then we know what we're looking at. We knew what we were seeing in Will Warren despite having poor output. We didn't see an ERA in the twos before Will Warren got here. They saw an ERA in the fours and fives and said, oh, that's the guy right there. We love it. He can be a rotation guy. And you and I were like, who the hell is this guy?
Yeah,
I know you're high on him, but what are you seeing right now in the short term? They said, oh, no, hold on. We know with Matt Blake that this is going to work. And it worked. They did the same thing with Fernando Cruz via trade. And you and I go into the deadline, and we go into the draft and we're like, okay, now's the time to go draft the shortstop so that perhaps you can move him over to third base in a year from now, right? When Ryan McMahon's off this team, you can get a third baseman, a shortstop, and we can have this young infield. But what we've learned, Jake, Brian Cashman doesn't like to do that. Brian Cashman wants an umbrella of starting pitchers and just have a surplus so he can trade that surplus for position players from other rosters. That's the way I look at it. And a lot of people don't
like
that.
Are they saying it's easier to develop pitching? Is that the
statement
they're making?
It's easier to find talent on the mound than it is a position player. It's not even close.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Not even close.
I mean, yeah, that's definitely fair. I want to point out, I liked the Bear pickup. What was his name? Bear something? Bear Matthews?
I have no idea.
He was I can't remember him. I think I texted you about him.
Let me ask you this, Jake.
He's more of a catcher.
You saw Dylan Cruz today, didn't you?
Yes.
Washington. Dylan Cruz was taken, I believe, number 2 overall.
I think you're right.
That was a can't miss talent. Dylan Cruz is not.
You miss him on the field all the time. You don't even notice him.
You don't notice him. Jackson Holliday. How many people are wearing Jackson Holliday's jersey in Baltimore right now? How many people are walking around the stadium and traveling to go see him play? This is no knock. It's difficult. He was the number one prospect in the sport at one point. Turned into nothing. So. And then, meanwhile, you look at arms. We see starting pitchers come into the game all the time. All the time at the top of the game. So it's not to say that starting pitching is easy to find, because it's certainly not. But what's harder to find? The next ace or two in the big leagues, or the next top shortstop in the game?
I want to point this out, because obviously, Michael, we really do appreciate
you
commenting
ahead and address
this, and following. I just want to say this as a statement to everybody. Francisco Lindor is the worst contract in professional baseball.
Awesome. Oh, I don't agree with that, but I'm gonna rip him in a different way. So go ahead and finish your statement.
He is owed 32.4, 32.4, 32.4, 32.4, 32.4, and 32.4. He's a free agent in 2032 when he's 38. He already looks like he's 38 out there in the field. Pathetic.
I take it you weren't high on that error he had today.
Awful. But, I mean, I've been on him for a while now because I just see whatever went on with Soto. Mm-hmm. The thing with Juan Soto, you don't have to love him, but you got to respect him. He's the best pure hitter in the sport. He is. And his preparation knows no bounds at the plate. He could leave a lot to be desired in the field, but you have to have one or the other. Lindor's so worried about things that have nothing to do with the game, and whatever happened with Soto is clearly still affecting him, and Juan Soto is already past that. Also, Lindor's just starting to hit a decline, and I think he already started to hit it last year, but it's evident. I think Soto puts way more into his craft, and I think he focuses on the right things, and I think there's a reason why, the Cleveland Guardians trade away this player when everyone's like, how do you trade away a player like that? I think they made the right decision for their ball club. And look at how many times they've been in the playoffs, and look at how many times Lindor's been in the playoffs.
I'm going to shock you with what I say about Tatis, because I don't know if many people would say this, but as you know, I don't really give a rip, so I'll just say it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I believe of the starters in Major League Baseball, considering the contract, considering the locker room fit and the personality, considering all of what the player provides, I believe that Francisco Lindor is the least valuable starter in the big leagues on any big league team. Here's the reason I say that. He's a horrible teammate. He doesn't fit in with anyone. He wants them to fit around him. That's not a leader. This is supposed to be their heartbeat in the clubhouse. And yet, Juan Soto, who we know what his personality is, people feel like Juan Soto just doesn't want to be a teammate. No, Juan Soto just wants to be left alone. That's what he did here in New York. It's what he did in San Diego. And you have to ask yourself, if you're a real leader, we shouldn't have to coddle the environment around you and adapt the environment to you. You need to be the one who can adapt. That's called maturity. That's something that Derek Jeter can do, and I'll prove it to you guys. How easy do you guys really think it was to deal with all the personalities that came into the room? Alex Rodriguez, Alex Rodriguez, Gary Sheffield, Hideki Matsui, of language barriers there, right? Robinson Cano, language barrier, and they're grouping up with different players on the roster. One player likes another, and you have Derek Jeter, who's not really helping, right? Alex Rodriguez, you have to figure out, how do I make this group work? Francisco Lindor doesn't work that way. He doesn't. Lindor just wants to go out there and say, well, I hit 280. I hit 30 plus home runs. I played good defense, and I'm an Energizer bunny and smiling. So the fans love it, and they're going to show me on TV. I'm going to be on all the commercials, MLB Network. But the reality is if your teammates don't like being around you and you don't pull more out of your teammates, you're not a leader in any way. And if you mean to tell me that we're going to bring Francisco Lindor across the way from Citi Field over to Yankee Stadium, I tell you, you're wasting your time and money. Yes. That dude is not worth a dime. He's not.
No.
He's not worth a dime. He's definitely not worth
He's not the money. Worst contract, because I didn't realize this, and I had to pull it up because someone said, I forgot Chris Bryant was even still getting paid. Chris Bryant,
of course,
is owed $27 million through 2028. Javier Baez is owed a ton of money through 2027. And Anthony Rendon is still under a contract, I think.
Baez, Bryant, Rendon. And guess what all of those guys have in common? They're liked and respected by their teammates.
Rendon?
Meanwhile, half the Mets roster was traded away and gotten rid of for who they voted for, arguments in the clubhouse, not fitting in. Jake, you mean to tell me that you have a group that likes each other and you're going to trade for a player who routinely dislikes his own teammates? Who routinely, his own owner came out and said, oh yeah, Juan Soto, the guy who just signed the $800+ million deal, he wasn't getting along with Francisco Lindor. There's no easier time to get along with someone than the first time you see him.
I know.
Come on, Jake.
It's ridiculous.
It's not even a serious conversation. So Michael, I do appreciate that you showed up to the show and you asked us this question. Because Lindor, on its surface, he can field, he can throw, he can hit. When everything's going right, he has all the tools to be a franchise-leading asset. But he doesn't do it consistently enough for the price that you're paying, and his personality just fits out of every room. I don't want him. I'm sorry.
Yeah. It's so funny to me because Lindor, we should be fans of Lindor. He's single-handedly destroyed everything the Mets were working towards.
You just burn it all to the ground.
And by the way, he was arguably the runner-up for best player in the NL the year before they signed.
He was underrated in that year, by the way. He was underratedly good. And yet the following year, they said, I just can't get along with these guys. Our biggest signing in the history of the Mets in Juan Soto. I can't get along with them. Are you kidding me?
Awful.
So you can say what you want about all these other contracts. I see it. Bogarts, Machado. You see all of them. Chris Bryant.
I forgot Chris Bryant was a thing. I totally forgot Chris Bryant was a person.
Well, shame on you. Well, unfortunately for him, he's got back issues. And
I know. I feel bad for him. He was a star. He absolutely was a star. But yeah, it's tough with that.
If Howe, by the way, if they made that move with Brian Cashman and brought him in, and we were dealing with Lindor till he was 38, I wouldn't question my fandom. I would hate rooting for this team with Francisco Lindor here. And that's coming from someone who actually wanted Lindor some years ago when he left Cleveland.
He would never get along with this team. Because, you know, say what you will about the Yankees, the one thing I never have a question about is their clubhouse culture. We can talk about how maybe they're not accountable, right? Maybe they're a little lackadaisical, but I don't have to worry about them getting into fist fights and having disagreements and freaking out. Feels like they're all pretty close. I mean, that's how it always comes off. So, and my thing is, yes, you know, it could be all smoke and mirrors, absolutely. But at the same time, when a team is at each other's throats, you know, it comes out in the media. It has never once come out about the Yankees. So, yeah, say what you will. That's one thing I do like, that you don't have like a toxic. That's one thing I would not be able to take them losing and also hearing all this stuff on the side.
What did you hear about Juan Soto? Do you remember the story we heard when Soto's family had an issue? Do you remember that story where they said that Juan Soto's family had a problem with something at Yankee Stadium? Do you remember who that problem was with?
A stadium worker. That they're not part of like the actual Yankees clubhouse.
So you see how we're having to manufacture issues in New York?
Yeah.
In the Bronx, we have to manufacture problems. They couldn't even lie and say that the problem was between Soto and Judge, or the problem was between whoever else on our roster. It was never. The Yankees just figure out their problems because that's the difference in our locker room. That's what they do.
Oh, and that security guard is a freaking dope. He gets on the phone
with Garrett Cole and gets mother effed. And they still work it out. You never heard another problem again. That's what our locker room's like. And look at Citi Field. It's a disaster.
It's so funny because, like, imagine, just think about this. You've worn a bag on your head, you know? Yep. Like, it's been bad. We've watched some awful, awful Yankees baseball. We've also watched good Yankees baseball.
We have.
Imagine during the awful parts, yeah, like, Anthony Volpe coming out, like, scolding people for who they voted for, while he's struggling, like, while he's the shortstop struggling, and he's supposed to be the face, like the future face of the team. He was the top prospect. He's trying to be a politician
at the same time. I'd be like, get this dude out of here.
Yeah,
just, I don't care who you voted for. Exactly. You're just hitting 210.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's literally what he's doing. But yeah, it's one of those things where it's just like, has nothing to do with the team. Like, nothing. And, you know,
Volpe didn't do that. No.
Volpe didn't do that. No. Poor Volpe. Now somebody's like, hey, why?
I don't understand how that's possibly misconstrued, but anywho.
Yeah,
The point is that if you're not hitting 380 and hitting 65 bombs and looking like Barry Bonds, you don't get to talk about politics. So go ahead and leave all that crap.
Yeah.
Anyway, you really shouldn't be talking about that with your wife. But Lindor takes it to the field and expects the GM to do something about it. Ninja Hot Dog with the five. And then, Jake, after this, I want to get to Prize Picks. And then I want to get some expectations going for the second half with some of these players. What we expect, most importantly, our manager and Aaron Boone, what he's going to do with some of these guys. Is Volpe going to be out there splitting time again? Or does he just cut ties? What's going on there? We'll get to that after Ninja. So Ninja, thank you for the five. He says, going to give it to the Yankees. They're trying to develop clutch genes. I don't know how they can develop that, but we'll obviously break it down here. So he says, I'm going to be at Friday's game against the Dodgers after the break here, and says, this will be the biggest test yet. So Jake, we don't get Will Warren, thankfully, in that series. Hasn't pitched well against the Dodgers. But Ninja's acknowledging that this isn't stat padding. This was clutch gene. I don't really know how to feel about development of clutch. I think clutch gene is just something you either have or you don't.
Trent That's Grisham the big thing it. With clutch. You either have it or you don't. You just can't have it or you don't. Clutch.
Right. So would you prioritize playing the players that have a clutch gene, or are you more concerned with what they do over 162?
I am all about what the final product looks like. Like, if by the time you get to October and this is a team that can hit in the clutch and they're finding ways to win, I don't care how ugly it was. If they won 95 games, I'm not like, oh, you know, that one time where they just did. No, I'm not going to be like that. You know, and that's what I've been trying to say. I think we got to look at the macro more than the micro here. Okay. This is a 4-game win streak and it's great, but it hasn't been a great win streak the way that they've won. That doesn't matter because, again, that's 4 wins into the win column. That's all that matters at the end of the day. At the end of the season, those 4 wins we're going to look back on, like, those 4 wins could be the difference between winning the division and losing the division. I mean, I'm not kidding you. This was a big time because the Rays kept winning. They had to keep pace. So, you know, obviously,
that's our job now.
You know what's coming out.
Sure, we put pressure on them.
Yeah, and you know what's coming out of the back end in the second half. You're going to have to go up against the Dodgers. Okay, so, like, welcome back. You got the Dodgers at the stadium, and you got Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is a better team than what they're normally, right? They're still above 500.
Yeah, Paul,
congratulations to them, by the way.
Yeah.
And then you got the Phillies, the rejuvenated Phillies in Philadelphia. You have a rejuvenated White Sox team that has Murakami back, and you're going to Chicago to play what? 4-game set? Because you have a double. I think there's a doubleheader. I'm not certain. And then, oh, by the way, you're also playing the Chicago Cubs, and you're playing the Cardinals, and you're playing Gary. This is a murder's row. The Yankees are playing the Dodgers, the Pirates, the Phillies, the White Sox, the Cubs, the Cardinals,
ton of National League juggernauts, and I wouldn't call them juggernauts, but it's the best they have to offer.
And Toronto,
yeah,
Toronto's the worst team that they play record wise that entire time. Like, that dates all the way out to August 16th. So the Yankees had to win these games, and you could argue they had to win other games because they need padding, because this is going to be a murderous row. It is.
I'm actually going to make a prediction about the division winner. I'm not going to sit up here and say, oh, the Yankees are going to run them down or Tampa's going to outlast them. I'm not going to commit to that.
Mm-hmm.
But last year, both the Jays and the Yankees won 94 games, and the season series was the difference. We knew that was coming. I'm going to say this. I believe the division winner is going to win anywhere from 90 to 92 games, and that's really low for the AL East in expectations.
Yeah.
It's low. So you look at our strength of schedule, you look at how we're playing. We're playing great in the clutch, but we are also playing great in the clutch, to be fair, with some context, against literally the worst bullpen in clutch time in the sport. So is it sustainable to win in this style? No. But when you go play the Dodgers, we've got to be better in innings 1 through 6. We've got to find a way to extract more from our offense at that point of the game. And they haven't done that here in the short term, and they haven't done it from March all the way up until now. So, Jake, my concern, I'll call it concern safely, is what does this style of play look like when it comes head-to-head against the better teams in the National League? Do they change their style? And I never want to predict that a team's going to change their style, but the Yankees have a lot to prove in the second half. What they did in the first half proves anything. As soon as we get kicked off against, you know, in those Dodgers series. So a lot to be proven, a lot to be embarrassed about as well. But sometimes
it's a tough road ahead. They're going to have to earn it.
They are.
And they didn't get exactly the easy draw at the end of the year. Like, yeah, you got your Baltimore Orioles to end the season.
Yeah.
You also have a 4-game. And by the way, this literally could decide the division, Gary. You have a 4-game set at the stadium against Tampa. You have a doubleheader, and then you have a back-to-back, and then you play Baltimore. That could literally decide the division. You also have the Arizona Diamondbacks, you have the Twins, you have the Mets. So they kind of threw those teams in there, the Rockies, but they're mixed in well. You don't have what you had last year where you can just go up against bad teams and just roll them. So if they need wins at the end of the year, they're going to have to steal some games against a tough team, especially in the Tampa Bay Rays. By the way, put that back up. I got something for you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because I saw gonna give it to the Yanks. So I don't know why I'd made this. I just, like, it took 2 seconds.
Yanks gonna give it to ya. Gonna give it to ya. Yanks gonna give it to ya.
Is this supposed to be DMX? I'm
mad. Come on.
Yanks gonna give it to ya. Gonna give it to ya. Yanks gonna give it to ya.
AI is so ridiculous.
Yeah. Highly regarded.
Why does he sound like that? Gonna give it to ya. Gonna give it to ya. That's so funny.
It's Stephen Hawking.
Oh, man. I don't care. It's all, it's all funny games.
Ninja,
thank you for that and giving me the inspiration. Every time they win, your mom does not like me, I swear. She's like, you're ridiculous. I do have a tendency to have a dad joke here and there.
It's I do.
Yeah. I like to have fun. Yeah, sounds anyway, like Microsoft.
Let's get over to Prize Picks, and then I wanna make some predictions of what we see from each player. Does that player get traded away? Do they give up on him despite where we'll talk about Austin Wells and what this play means? But I know we have no baseball. We can't make selections about the Home Run Derby. Is that right?
Alex Marin has left the chat. Alex didn't even like it. Oh my God.
I told you.
Wow. The AI man himself. All right. Well, all right. Oh, nowhere to go but up. So here we go. Boom. So there's. You can't stop it. You can't stop them. You can only hope to contain them. Anyway, so this is Prize Picks, in case you missed it.
Let me know what Gabrielle Knutson's going to do tomorrow.
This is tennis, right? Yeah, so, right, you see it up here. You got tennis, you got soccer, you got WNBA first half. Oh, there's WNBA going on right now. Okay. And then you got
WNBA unloaded.
Yeah, you got the World Cup. Kylian Mbappe is the only one that I've ever heard of here.
You even heard the guy right next to him?
Nope. Interesting. And then you got the NBA Summer League. Personally, we're not making picks. We're not making any picks, but I'm telling you, that one right there, Caleb Wilson. NBA Summer League, he dropped 30.
Jake is
30.
Taking a stance. The best player in the Summer League is going to play really good.
Yes, he had 35 points, his first ever game in the Summer League. He's pissed off. Everybody was drafted ahead of him. And to be fair, he's well within his right to be pissed off because he is as good as most of those guys at the top. And it just, he never gets placed in that category. You saw it even at UNC. So Caleb Wilson is going to have at least 21 points in the Summer League tomorrow. I am not going to be watching because I'm going to be watching the Home Run Derby, which I'm hoping Prize Picks at some point adds a Home Run Derby thing. That would be cool. They don't have one, so here's cricket if you want to play it. And there's WNBA, and there's the NFL and the NHL. So, yeah, this is Prize Picks. If you've never checked it out, definitely go and do so. The link's in the description below. Play 5, get 50 instantly in lineups using the code HMA. The link is in the description below, and it's available in 40 states.
Yeah, Jake, by the way, can you believe I've been holding this baseball bat for the equivalent of like 14 hours in a row of doing the show?
Yeah, you know, it's a good workout.
I don't know about all that, but
It's not a heavy bat?
No, it's quite literally a Little League mini bat.
No.
Yeah. I feel like it's, you've seen the movie Step Brothers, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, he's like, I've got a samurai sword that's signed by Randy Jackson. This mini bat is signed by Ken Griffey Jr.
Oh, I love that.
So I have to make sure I don't ruin that. But I don't have a frame for it, so it's part of the reason I hold it.
That, okay, so it's a mini bat. That's why people are getting so butthurt about you. What's he doing with his little stick?
Well, I mean, if somebody's going to complain about someone holding a bat during a baseball podcast, well, we probably have
I'm just gonna hold
bigger things to talk about.
My water bottle the entire episode.
I don't know. I feel like if I was taking phone calls or I was texting during the show.
Exactly. People just get mad no matter what.
I mean.
Why do you have Pokemon in your backdrop? Because I fucking want to. Like, you know what I mean? Why is Spider-Man back there? Because it's my backdrop, not yours. Yeah,
this is true.
Mine. Just like it's.
Let's make some predictions.
Remember, it used to have a Saquon Barkley jersey out there, and then you're like, you know what? Screw the Eagles.
Yeah, I'm over football. But let's do predictions.
Darius Negan. Oh.
I have no idea who that is.
He's the guy who like killed everybody that everybody liked in Walking Dead. Like literally the entire cast that everyone loved. He killed him with a baseball bat.
Oh, that's a tough way to go.
Mm-hmm.
That's a bad way to go. So I'm going to get the prediction started. Right, I'm going to get them started. I'm going to go into the rotation first, Jake. I think we'll do these quickly. We're already at the 45-minute mark, and we've got a long break ahead of us. So enjoy the home run derby. And I believe they're going back to swings instead of time, which is much better. We should be able to watch home runs. We already know what we expect from Cam Schlittler. We've got Fried, Warren, Weathers, Cole, Rodon, and Schmidt. Jake, you have the prediction that Clark Schmidt's going to show back up and have a role in our bullpen. In part because he has a ton of injury history and just can't stay on the mound. He can't. And he's also not a 1-3 guy in this rotation. So you have to figure out what you're going to do with him. But the biggest question mark to me of all these guys is going to be the development. Actually, and this might surprise you, you probably not expect me to say this. If Max Fried doesn't pitch to an ace level in October, this team still can't win anything. Unless they make a trade for Tarek Skubal, one of Fried or Rodon has to be brilliant. If both those pitchers, they throw the way that they did in 2025, this team's not going anywhere. They're just not. You have to be able to trust your starting rotation. And as far as I'm concerned, I don't trust either of those players in a big game. So one of them needs to surprise us. Jake, any thoughts about this rotation? Who do you think is going to be the guy if they step up? Do you think it's Fried? Is it Rodon? Is it Weathers? Weathers has had an up and down season. Who?
Garrett Cole.
No, but Garrett Cole's, we already assuming Garrett Cole. And
we shouldn't assume
he's going to pitch well, but you're not just going to have a 1-2 and that's it. There needs to be a third guy that steps up. Who's that third guy that will?
Okay. That's a different question.
Yes.
I would say that third guy has to be Max Fried. Why are we paying him if he can't do that?
Because he's in theory, he's making roughly the same amount of money as Rodon, correct?
Yeah, but you know, Rodon, we knew when they you know, got him, mm-hmm. he didn't have a lot of experience in the postseason.
Right.
He was pitching for Chicago. So there you go. Obviously, he went to the Giants, but still. And they don't go to the playoffs very often either. So anyway, point being, right? You have Max Fried, who we did a video on before they signed him. And we both said we did not want Max Fried. And here's why. We did not like what we saw when doing the research on his October numbers. However, to give Max Fried credit, he had a very, very dominant performance in World Series, I believe, game 2. So he stepped up in a big way, and that right there shows me he can do it. So I need to see that because I haven't seen that so far in his Yankee tenure. And of course, we only saw him last year, but I think he can, Gary, and I think he needs to. And if he does, the Yankees could very well be up 3-0 in a series with that pitching.
Yeah, because in my mind, you can't go into a series and say, well, we've got Schlittler, Cole, and let's just say Cole lives up to the expectation that there's a lot of pressure on him, clearly, mm-hmm. off of Tommy John. And he does you're not going to go out there and win game 1 and 2 and then kick it off to your 3. That's just not how postseason that starts tend to go, Jake. One of them tends to lose that game, and there's a big game 3 start on the road. Someone has to step up in that game 3, and you can't be looking at a deficit and then hand it back on short rest to the top of your rotation and expect to go from there. That's a loss. That's an L. Yeah. That means you're going home. So the Jays had that last year. They had a guy and Treya Savage, who stepped in, and we said, hold on a second, who's what's going on here? Pitching game three. This is the ultimate card that they just pulled out of their hat. We can't answer this. That was the big problem for the Yankees. We had nothing. What?
You reminded me of something I wanted to talk about.
Did I?
The whole Schneider thing.
Oh, yeah, I saw your tweet. You didn't like that Schneider was saying that he was going to pitch Dylan Cease.
Good manager, absolute buffoon.
Yeah. It's the
it's one of those like hey guys, I wasn't going to pitch him. Like, all right, Schlittler already made that decision. You didn't have to come out and be like, "Hey guys, I'm pitching Dylan Cease. I wasn't going to pitch Schlittler." Like, you could just say, "I'm pitching Dylan Cease." You didn't have to be like, "I would have gone with Dylan Cease anyway."
I think it was meant to just bother people. That was the whole point.
Yeah, he's just a weirdo. I don't know. It's stupid.
You were like, it was meant to bother me. It was rage bait, and it did.
Yeah.
Well, it did exactly as intended.
I say the same, you know, actually, good point there. My dad, the whole point of Skip Bayless is to bother people, right? It's rage bait. I mean, he knows his stuff. He knows more than he lets on. And my father's like, yeah, you know what? He's like, you know, the whole you mad, bro? My dad would go, yeah, I'm mad. He's like, yeah, I'm still mad. That's how I feel. Screw Schneider. You're a buffoon.
Yeah, you don't like the whole being chippy. Yeah, I thought it was a stupid thing to say.
It's stupid because it just, to me, it's disrespectful.
It's pointless,
and it's throwing a jab at a really, really good pitcher in Cam Schlittler, who, by the way, is celebrating the fact he got into his first All-Star game. Okay, so I just think it was really shitty, and yeah, that's what I would say there. I also want to give a shout out to Schneider for coaching the AL All-Star team while he's in last place in the AL East. So congratulations.
Hey, Jake, by the way, Kent says mission complete. Schneider won. Mission complete. He had podcasters cover what he said. He did.
That's what I mean. That's kind of my dad's point. Like, oh, congratulations. You baited me into being upset. You won the game. Who gives a rip?
And the Yankees didn't say anything about it. So I guess mission failed. I'm not sure. But Jake, I want to get into our bullpen as well. And then ultimately into the most important part of the team, I think, which is the position players. The Yankees right now, I said that they have three trusted guys in Hendrick, Cruz, and Bednar. Also, we've got, what's his name in there? Paul Blackburn. He shouldn't be. And Kent, by the way, the rage baiting is the lamest crap in the planet.
It's so dumb.
It's the lamest thing. The only people that think that stuff's cool is like, they're like 20. So,
oh, Big Boss Baby Bomber 3.
Who?
He asked me my favorite Pokemon generation. I said 3. Johto.
Oh.
Or is that 2? No, it's 3. I can't freaking remember. It's Johto. There you go.
LeGrandhe, because of the injury, isn't going to be in that mix. He's just not. So the Yankees have to figure out how to add one or two names, whether it's Weaver, is it big game hunting and a Mason Miller, and you're surprising the world that they traded a player. I know they commented earlier yesterday about Mason Miller, and they said our intentions aren't to move this player, but I couldn't imagine this far ahead of the deadline that they're going to say, oh yeah, our intention is to trade him while they're floating around 500. But I thought it was interesting that they didn't say definitively, we're not trading him. So I'll leave it there.
Mm-hmm.
But Jake, the Yankees have to figure out some more bullpen guys to go with that. But to go into our lineup, Cody Bellinger and Grisham, in my opinion, are going to play. When it's all said and done, those guys are going to play. The Yankees need to score. They especially need to score late in games, and Trent Grisham's helping them do that. Now, here's the catch. Jason Dominguez and Spencer Jones, which of those two players is likely to be given the keys? If there's an open spot in right field, I believe it's Jason Dominguez. I know some people might disagree with that because the potential ceiling of a Jones might be higher, but the baseline in 2026 is probably higher for Jason Dominguez, and it seems like that's the angle that they're going. And my answer for as far as Aaron Judge is, I said, Jake, I believe he'll be the DH of this team.
Yeah,
that's just where he most likely should be. Do I think it's going to happen? Not necessarily, but you know why, Jake? I think they're going to shove him right back out to right field because they don't know what to do with the whole Ben Rice and Goldschmidt thing. If Paul Goldschmidt's hitting, there's no other way to get him in the lineup other than having DH open. So they're in a tough spot as far as that goes with Stanton returning. But Ryan McMahon's going nowhere. My expectation of Aaron Boone is that he's going to rug pull us with this Jose Cabrera Volpe thing. Volpe's going to be playing in big games. He is. We're going to be in a division series and a championship series, and I see your eye roll. I see the head shake, and I can hear the gasps of all the people in our comments. But don't you know that Anthony Volpe is going to be right there at the end of this season? We're going to just hope for the best. But
or there's going to be another injury because that's baseball, and somebody is going to, you know, something's going to happen. I mean, that's baseball, right? It happens every year. We were talking about this. Isn't it weird?
Yeah.
Isn't it weird how every time, wow, the depth is crazy on this team. Mm-hmm. As soon as people start to realize, wow, the depth is crazy on this team, next thing you know, guys are dropping like flies. So, yeah. And by the way, the Yankees have had their fair share of injuries this year. It's been kind of weird because they started off pretty clean. And then it just felt like injury after injury, Rodon dealing with something now.
I feel like the injuries, though, make a lot of sense, though, when you consider who got hurt. Like
absolutely. Carlos Rodon, Fried, Rodon, Judge, right? Even, because Judge only gets hurt in the field, and yet they continue to put him in the outfield, even though his bat is the entire point.
Max Fried typically gets hurt. He gets hurt.
Yep.
Trent Grisham had the exact same injury this year as he had last year, like same leg and everything.
Stanton.
So it's just difficult for me to, like, Jason Dominguez was hurt earlier this year. He's been banged up his whole career. So it's hard for me to feel like we have poor luck when they talk about Stan and they talk about Grisham's injuries and Max Fried, because these are some of the usual suspects that we don't expect to be there for 162. So maybe that's on us for not accommodating for those expected injuries, in my opinion. But
I want to ask you, by the way, so now that we get into the second half of the year, are they going to finally stop acting like Yvonne Cruz isn't an MLB pitcher?
No, I know you were talking about the timing and whether or not hitters can figure him out if they show up here too early. I don't believe the Yankees are doing that. Matter of fact, I don't think any team in baseball is doing that. Stowing away talent at the minor league level so they can unveil them at the end. So offenses have less time to see him. I don't think they're doing
it. I was being sarcastic. I mean, he should already be up. Yeah, I think it's stupid as hell.
I think there's a reason that they're not calling him up, that they're just not telling us, which is fair. But it doesn't
give you the result. If it's what Boone said, then somebody needs to be scolded. I don't know. Did you hear when apparently Boone didn't like how he wasn't keeping guys on?
We talked about it the day he was sent down. Yeah. He wasn't holding on runners.
What on earth?
Is what they said.
Well, how many runners are getting on base when he's on the freaking mound?
Well, obviously someone brought that up. And I'm going to say this.
You lose all your leverage when you talk about Jake Bird. Like when you put Jake Bird out there on your team, you've lost all leverage.
Jake, you can't tell me that Aaron Boone's privy to the information of how a reliever at the AAA levels holding on runners. I'm sorry.
That's you being passed to him. Tell me
he knows what's going on with it. At best, he read a totality of a scouting report. You don't tell me that Aaron Boone was watching him hold on runners. As busy as he is, 162 game regular season, just like anybody else, he shows up to the stadium before everybody else. He leaves after everyone else. He answers all the questions. And you mean to tell me that he's paying attention? He says, oh yeah, he's striking guys out at an incredible clip. He's going out there. He's not walking guys. He's doing everything you want. He pitched multi-inning. He pitched one inning. He looked great at the stadium. He looks like he's not maybe built for New York. Let's not get ahead of ourselves, but he looks ready for the moment. But no, but he doesn't hold guys on. I'm sorry, Jake. The excuse didn't make sense at the time it was given to us. It didn't.
No, it was ridiculous. It actually sounded like one of those TikTok scouts that try to talk like pro, you know, football scouting, and they'll be like, yeah, you know, as you can see here, and they're showing you something, and you're like, this dude doesn't even know football, does he? Right. You ever see that?
No.
The TikTok NFL scouting community, Now, there's some people that know what they're doing, but it looks ridiculous, like, when you don't.
TikTok NFL scouting community?
There was a player who... what was his name? He didn't end up being anything. I'm not, like, saying... All right. But they were literally getting on it. They're like, yeah, this is bad pursuit right here. And it's like, you know, he sees the ball carrier, hits the ball carrier head on, forces a fumble. He's like, yeah, as you can see here, he's just poor pursuit. Took way too long. He could have had the fumble earlier. It's like, oh my God, dude. So yeah, it's like that. I mean, I don't know.
I didn't know that there was an NFL scouting committee on TikTok. No,
they'll take any player, because here's the thing with sports, and we see it with baseball. Anybody can look terrible under a microscope. Terrible. You could take Aaron Judge. You could take Shohei Ohtani. You could take Babe Ruth. I don't care who you take. They have looked terrible at one point. Aaron Judge has struck out 4 times in a game, multiple times.
Stephen A. Smith went on ESPN and said, Shohei Ohtani looks overmatched against big league pitching because he watched a few clips of what he looked like in spring training falling over on breaking balls. And he said, I have enough information here to draw a conclusion about what it's going to look like long term. And he felt comfortable enough giving us that take as if it was the holy grail. But the reality is, Jake, is that you need much more to draw these conclusions. But I'm going to actually ask you the question now. What are your expectations for this group? Not just for the rotation, not just for the lineup, not for the bullpen, for the group. Are they winning the division or not? Are they going to go out there and win the division because they're outrunning a low-budget team and what the Tampa Bay Rays are?
That's a good question.
And they're going to disappoint us again in October. Is there anything different we're seeing from this group that we didn't see from last year's team?
I'm going to be honest here. The Yankees don't have to win the division. I know that's going to shock people. And I'm actually going to give them a pass even if they don't. Because, think about last year, right? If you tied the Toronto Blue Jays.
Mm-hmm.
They just didn't play well in those games. I'm not going to hold it over the Yankees if Tampa just, because of this, this skid that the Yankees had, Tampa ends up just holding them off by a game. They win 96 games and the Yankees win 95. I'm not going to sit here and be like, wow, that was a failure.
Because that's a different story, 96 to 95. But we all know at this point, given how well the Yankees have to play and the Rays have to play to get to 90 wins alone, they have to play at an incredible clip. Let's just start there. So if they lose this division, they're probably winning anywhere from 88 to 91 games. That's a different feeling than 94 wins like we saw last year.
You're saying, but I mean the rest of the conference, though, like the AL, right, the rest of the league, it's just like,
I understand.
For me, the Yankees are probably going to be the second best team if they can't get past Tampa. I kind of have a feeling they're going to get past Tampa. One thing that I continue to look at Tampa is that they have a 35-15 record at home. They're great at home. Mm-hmm. They still have not figured out how to win on the road consistently.
Mm-hmm.
The Yankees still, through all of that BS that we just watched, the 15 of the last 19, whatever, that they lost, they still have a plus 91 run differential. Tampa has a plus 32. So
yes, you're a major buyer in the run differential, and I don't care. I don't care at all about it.
No, but for me, though, I'm bigger on the road games. What are you doing on the road, right? What are you doing on the road? And the way I see it is this. Tampa is 21-23, and the Yankees are 31-22. I will always take the team that's better on the road. Because you're going to be on the road in the playoffs. Guaranteed, you're going to be on the road.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely going to be on the road. And you can also make the argument, if a Rays fan's listening to our show, mm-hmm. they'd say, great, you guys are the better road team. We're far superior at home. And that's the importance of us being better than you over the course of 162. You come to Tampa. We're eventually going to have to go and play at Yankee Stadium, But no matter which way you slice it, even if you win every single game you guys play at the stadium, you've still got to come over here and play us. And by the way, the Yankees aren't playing that great against the Rays on the road. So that's really the most important thing, is that while we can talk about what the Yankees do on the road or what they do at home, they don't play great against the teams that we're talking about, that we're going to be seeing on the road. And so that really in itself is more important, because I know you and I both agreed on this at the time. That home road thing with Toronto was much less important than the fact that the Jays were just way better than us last year. They were a better baseball team.
Well, let me just say this, right? The Jays had a losing record on the road. So I'll admit that, like, what I'm saying right now, it's like, well, it didn't bother the Jays last year. I know.
Not at all.
The Jays are a better version of what Tampa is right now. Better pitching. They had some heavy hitter. They have Caminero, right? But they don't have, like, when Vladdy was playing the way he was, and they got Springer, you know, and they had Bo Bichette, right? So they had those guys, but then they had the Ernie Clement, right? They had the Alejandro Kirk. I would say, like, I just think the Jays last year were a better version of the Rays. I still think
they
are.
I think the Rays probably think that we're a worse version of what we were last year.
And I would disagree. I think that they're absolutely better than last year.
You think the team that's going to probably win less than 94 games in a worse division is better?
Well, think about this, right? So they win 94 last year.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, I mean, there's no probably, because, like, let's be honest, they are ahead of last year's team right now.
They are
currently.
It's just the strength of schedule is significantly more difficult this year, the rest of the way, as opposed to what we saw last year.
But last year, there were still quite a few question marks. You didn't have Gerrit Cole, by the way. So that's a big thing. Rodon pitched very well. And so did Max Fried, right? And of course, you had Aaron Judge.
Mm-hmm.
But aside from that, like, you know, you had Grisham, you had Judge. Jazz was kind of doing his thing, right? Bellinger and, you know, Rice. But to me, it was so kind of all over the place with McMahon. Caballero was like in and out of the lineup, right? He wasn't playing every day. And then, like, Austin Wells, obviously have him now. You're going to be replacing him, I would imagine, in the lineup. He'll probably be on the roster.
Yeah, because you're making the argument of what the team will look like at the end, given likely trades. We would agree with that. What's the likely unit in September or October of this year? That should be a better team, because the trades that we have to make are so obvious. We need a new catcher, right? We have to go get more bullpen guys, but we also already know who our closer is, right? So some things we already have the answer to, and it's just so obvious how to get better. So I would agree with you that the Yankees in 2026 are going to go into the October as a better team than they were last year. That's more than likely the case. What's also going to be super important here is how much better is Tampa going to be between now and the deadline? Because Tampa, they would be fools to sit where they are. They feel like they're the better team than the Yankees. If they went head to head, they feel like they would have our number. But there's no reason for you to be standing pat with where you are. The Jays didn't last year. They went out there and tried to be as aggressive as possible at the deadline and got things done. Whereas us, on the other hand, we were pretty conservative in what we did. We, of course, went out and got a bullpen guy, but we made a bunch of bargain bin deals. Went out and got, right, Bird. You're talking about Doval. We made a death by a thousand cuts. I mean, it was our death. So tough to answer this, Jake, because the Yankees just have to play better in October of this year for any of it to matter. But do you feel like Tampa, if it was standing now and we started October with the rosters that we expect to have, do you think we're going to beat Tampa in October when it's all said and done?
Yes.
You do. Okay.
I don't think Tampa has enough.
Okay.
Mind you, they had to take their closer and turn him into a starter because they don't have any starters that they really trust outside of McClanahan and Rasmussen.
If Tampa, I expect the Yankees to be aggressive, right? Go out and get Jeffers and do what they're supposed to do at the deadline.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if I see Tarek Skubal available, right? And I see the Rays be, they were aggressive on Shohei Ohtani. If I see them make a splash move, the deadline might dictate who, I should say for me, I'll speak for me. If Tampa is the most aggressive team in the room in our division, they're the better team, in my opinion. But we obviously can offset that by what we do in the deadline as well. And I guess the issue with that is that Brian Cashman doesn't tend to be the most aggressive guy at the deadline. So
he was pretty aggressive last year. I mean,
he
made a lot of moves. Yeah, I mean, it's not what I would have done, but I mean, he was pretty aggressive.
How was that aggressive?
You traded like seven different times.
That to me isn't aggressive.
Like, but going out and getting Bednar is aggressive.
If somebody goes to the mall and they say, I got this on sale and I got this on sale and I got this on sale, I would say, well, yeah, you did a lot of shopping, but you also did a lot of bargain shopping.
No, absolutely. But Bednar, that was an aggressive move.
That was, yeah.
And by the way, no.
He wasn't at the top of the market. It wasn't that aggressive.
When Wells was struggling, right? It looks bleak at catcher. Mm-hmm. They chose to trade away Rafael. Was Rafael Flores? Yeah, it was Flores. They chose to trade away the red hot catcher in their farm system. They literally were like, all right.
I definitely think we have different perspectives on how aggressive they really were. I felt like it could be considered aggressive because of the volume of moves that they made. But I felt like I was watching six layups instead of taking some threes.
What's aggressive, though?
Aggressive to me is getting a player at the top of the position. And mind you,
I think there are tiers to aggression.
Multiple players were above Bednar on the market at that time, and they didn't get either of those two players. So that's part of the reason why. And I'm not here to complain about David Bednar, because you and I, we both know here.
Yeah.
I'm really high on Bednar, and I never thought he was a problem. But we never went to the top of the market at any one position. So that's partly why I didn't feel like the Yankees were the most aggressive team.
Well, we didn't say most aggressive. I was talking about the fact that I felt like they were aggressive after Bednar.
Yeah, no, we just disagree. I don't think they're aggressive.
Well, to me, I just don't like closers on the market. They're always overpriced. So like to go out and get a guy like David Bednar, who's like a proven closer, that was an aggressive move. It wasn't the most aggressive move. It wasn't bargain bin hunting. I mean,
I wouldn't call it bargain bin hunting, but I wouldn't call it aggressive either.
I think it was aggressive. Yeah, we just disagree. Cause I mean, I think, obviously going out and getting Duran or whoever, that would be uber aggressive, right? But yeah, I think there are different layers to it.
It's super fractor aggressive.
Yeah, it's super fractor aggressive, but no.
But
like Mason Miller, that's not an aggressive move. That's a crazy move. We don't see those moves. That doesn't happen. They just don't happen.
Well, they don't happen for us, but they happen.
No, they typically don't happen. The Dodgers didn't do that. It was the Padres. The Padres are also the same team that traded for Juan Soto and then sold him at a discount price. So like, you know what I mean? They gave up.
Yeah, agree to disagree. The Yankees, in my opinion, were not aggressive. You think they were. Brian Bashman with the five.
No, I'm just saying that was an aggressive move. That's all I'm saying. Bednar, I think, was an aggressive
move. Not definitively. It's not. It's your opinion. But Brian Bashman, thank you for the five. He says, have you guys seen the numbers that how do you even say this name? Esmerlin Valdez is putting up? He had a high strikeout rate in the minors.
This is actually Brian Cashman. I'm convinced. He will literally name people I've never heard of. And you know I follow prospects.
Yeah, I know you do. Can we pull up his numbers?
Yeah, I'm already on it.
Because I saw a snippet of it, and I think someone tweeted it to me, but I didn't really dive into it. I mean, it was busy.
Hitting 309?
To be honest.
This year?
Esmerlin. Appreciate it, Brian.
Wait, what is it? All right, so it shows 2026 stats and 2026 stats. I'll just show you because
you're talking about the dude who has 10 home runs he's had 60 at bats. He's Barry Bonds. Yeah. Look at this.
But what is this?
It's 10 homers and 94 at bats.
2026. What is this? Who created this site?
I'm not sure.
And then he's got. Oh, okay.
How old is the guy?
I mean, this is still stupid, but this is the MLB stats and this is the minor league stats.
Yeah, how old's the bloke?
He's doesn't say.
Well, everyone's 22. I shouldn't even.
He was born in 2004.
Yeah.
God, I feel old.
Yeah, it's because we are.
Yeah, so he's like 21.
We're not born in like 06.
Tiny man, you stupid. Yeah. You ever see that video?
Yes, of course.
It's amazing.
Mom, you used that joke yesterday.
So yeah, we just saw. Oh, I see what Brian Bashman's saying. Yeah, this is a Spencer Jones coded tweet. Love it. Did I just call it a tweet? I bet it.
Super chat. Super?
Yeah. Oh, here we go.
Hold on.
You're taking forever. I'm going to do it to you.
Yeah, well, it's. Hold on here.
Let me get my reading glasses on. Jesus, man. Now, the moment has fleeted. Gary Gary is dial up.
It's true.
It took but him Brian, so long.
Brian, we do appreciate it.
Oh my God.
And we'll also, Jake, I know we didn't mention it before. So some of you are probably wondering what the hell we're gonna be doing over this break. Well, for one, it'll be a break. But also on our Patreon, we're gonna talk the players that were drafted from the Yankees. And on top of that, some of the players that I know we talked about, some catchers that they overlooked in day one, we're going to talk about players they potentially could have taken. And we're not going to hang on to that too long because, I mean, they're not part of our organization, but it's always nice to know, Jake, who was there for the taking and who we decided to go with. And I know at one point this past couple of years, we saw an entire draft of the Yankees taking pitching. They didn't take one position player the whole entire year. And this year, it's been a little different. I know some people were asking why we were taking shortstops. We tried to explain why we got that. But yeah, we're going to be doing that on our Patreon. And the link for that Patreon will be down below in the description. So if you're interested in that, go down there and click it. It'll redirect you to our Patreon.
Hell yeah. And I think that's going to do it. Real quick, we're going to make our picks. Who is coming in first, and who is coming in second place in the home run derby?
Who's in it?
So Kyle Schwarber with 32, Ben Rice with 29, Junior Caminero with 28. But didn't he win last year? I think he did.
Is there a way for us to get the full list on the screen?
So no, it was Big Dumper. Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'm not going to remember. After you say three names, they're gone.
Yep. Let's see. Nope, that's not it.
He's not in the derby.
That is tiny. There we go.
Okay, so I'm going to just use process of elimination. Wilson Contreras isn't winning the home run derby. Bryce Harper's won it. Jordan Walker. Oh, man.
I like Jordan Walker a lot.
I was going to say Jordan Walker would be a great pick. I'm still going to say he's not going to win it, though. It's got to be a big body. You just use process of elimination. I'm going to go.
Bryce Harper has no chance.
Who do I think can last stamina-wise in a derby like this?
Isn't it? It swings, right?
I'm going to go ahead and go with Kyle Schwarber to win the home run derby.
I'm going to go with the guy who has the most home runs.
No, but the reason I'm it matters, I mean, I don't have to go with an underdog. It's mm-hmm. more so about what type of body style you have. Like, you can look at Ben Rice as an example, and you can see it being much easier for him to get tired doing a home run derby as opposed to a player like Kyle Schwarber.
He does have a really kind of elongated swing.
Right. I can see Murakami doing well. Obviously, Harper's already done well. Junior Caminero, I can see him struggling.
I think he lost last year to Dumper.
Yeah, I'm gonna go.
He didn't
Kyle
have
Schwarber.
To tell them not like, oh, I'm not doing it. No, they just didn't ask him because he's terrible.
You know, ironically, we can say everyone everyone's a sleeper, because I mean, look at the list. These guys, I'd say the least likely guy to win is probably Wilson Contreras, which I know Jake probably puts a smile on your face.
I never had an issue with the guy, and I just realized he's just kind of, I don't know. I don't like him. Because it's, you saw the thing today, they're like showing it, and they're like, yeah, this pitcher, Cavalli or whatever, they're like, yeah, he had a hard time in his last start. It was affecting him. Like, he felt really bad. I was like, why do you feel bad? It was like, Wilson Contreras is just a dick. Yeah. I'm sorry, when you get into four different altercations, you can't just be like, oh,
yeah. Wilson Contreras is like Halle Berry. Halle Berry wants us to believe she had like five husbands and six fiancés, and she's like, they're all the problem. I'm like, no, ma'am, I think it might. It's like Jennifer Lopez as well. Jennifer Lopez wants us to think that everyone else is the problem. It's like,
yeah, no.
Sometimes when there's an issue and there's smoke around you every year, it just might be you. It's possible.
That is fair. I'm trying to decide. So you're going with Schwarber to win. Who's coming in second place?
Second place, I'm going to go Jack Caglione. And that's to do with the least amount of homers, but this is a long lever guy who's just got a lot of natural power. Dude, you look at his legs, I think the stamina will be there. Give me Jack Caglione being overtaken by Kyle Schwarber.
I don't think Wilson Contreras has a hootin' chance. I don't. It's like one is not like the others. Like I know he has 20. I don't know how he has 20, but I would probably say
it's a good year.
I'm like kind of looking at all the swings. I mean, Bryce Harper definitely has a home run derby swing. We'll say that. Kind of leaning towards Murakami. I do think Ben Rice could really get hot early on and have like one, but
do you realize how good of a year Murakami should have been having with this?
It's so sad, dude. 57 games. He goes on IL. All right. I'm going to surprise you here.
Okay.
I'm going to go with Jordan Walker to win and Murakami to come in second.
Murakami. Okay.
I think Jordan Walker is going to have a fun derby. That dude, he's got a lot of exit velo behind his bat. Good swing.
I thought he was a bust at one point, and he fixed his, well, according
I
to
never
them,
counted him out. That was angle. My guy.
Yeah.
My co-host on Downtown Rams, mm-hmm. Alexis, she is a St. Louis Cardinals fan. And she's given me props on Twitter over it. I have always been high on Jordan Walker.
Yeah.
And
he turned it around.
You sure? You sure about that? I was like, yep. He's going to turn
it
around.
He's a bro.
Yep. He turned it around. So thank you, Jordan Walker, for not making me look ridiculous.
It's a bro bomb.
By the way, how on earth did James Wood not get invited to the Home Run Derby? He would have been perfect. I would have picked him easily.
Well, maybe you also have to accept the invitation, too. So that's another part of it. Maybe you just didn't want to do it.
Ah, man. I get why you wouldn't want to do it. Now that Rice is already in it, I'm fine with it. I'm like, whatever.
Yeah, today's culture, too, with social media, is that if a LeBron James or a Michael Jordan or a Kobe Bryant does, if you did a dunk contest in today's era, you might do what Jazz Chisholm did. Right, Jazz Chisholm goes out there and lays an egg, and people are like, oh, this is a negative thing for Jazz rather than a fun type of thing. So there's some drawbacks, by the way, to doing these competitions in today's era.
Yeah,
make you look like a loser temporarily.
I would say, I mean, Jazz never had a good he didn't have a good build for the Home Run Derby, first
of course
off.
Not.
And second, he had maybe the worst. To be fair to Jazz, I mean, he also swung at them. He had the worst pitching I've ever seen.
The pitching is almost just as important. Having some, like, you're familiar with how it's going to be thrown. You need to throw the ball with velocity in a certain spot consistently. And I believe Ben Rice is being thrown to by his dad, if I'm not mistaken. So
yeah, I saw that.
On paper,
I think Rice has a chance to surprise. I think he's going to do well in the early rounds, but I don't. His swing, I agree with you. I think he's going to get tired. I'm rooting for him. I hope he wins the whole damn thing.
It's a Freddie Freeman did the home run derby. He could do well, but he's not a power hitter. He's not a pure power bat. He's the type of guy who's going to hit 280 to 300, 310.
The swing matters.
The swing does matter. It does.
Like when you watch Ben Rice, there is so much to it. Caminero also should probably, in my opinion, he should be the odds-on favorite. He's got the best swing by far, right? He came in second place last year. He already knows what it takes, you know, to be in the home run derby.
He seems like the best hitter in the league right now.
He's probably the one that I should go with, but I'm trying to be a little bit different here. And I'm gonna stick with Walker, and then Murakami comes in second.
Hey, when's Junior a free agent?
I don't know. Ask the Guardians. They had him, and I don't even know who they traded him for.
Can we get some information on that in the comment section? I would love.
Wasn't he the guy who was like, I wanted to sign with the Yankees, but they didn't want
him? I don't know. I honestly, I have no idea.
I'm pretty sure he was that guy.
Would be sweet. Hell of a player.
I think they were the ones that turned down Junior Caminero.
Wait, was Caminero, was he the dude who was hitting home runs in the WBC and he's like doing the all
Yankees
the Yankees
passed on Junior Caminero. I knew him? That.
Oh, man.
They chose not to sign him. He said he wanted to. He was a 15-year-old and he wanted to sign, and they decided to sign Jason Dominguez instead.
That is not what you want.
Oh,
it's okay,
man.
I'll tell you what, you give Junior Caminero, you give
I remember in an interview
James Rousen, you give him Caminero and they're gonna be like, son, what you're gonna want to do with your barrel,
you want to take the bat like and scratch your back with it.
Mm-hmm. That's what you're gonna want to do.
Yeah. No, dude, yeah, I agree.
So Brian says we got four more years before Caminero becomes a free agent, so it's not great, Jake.
It's not what you want.
No. Tough.
Yeah, it's so funny to me. Because I remember that interview. He was like, yeah, I wanted to be a Yankee, but they didn't want me. So now, something to the effect of, now I'm just going to beat up on him.
That sounds like Bryce Harper.
Yeah.
He wanted to be a Yankee. And
he's in the home run derby, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's two guys there, and I'm sure the Yankees wanted Jack Aglione in the draft, but they couldn't pick there even if they were the worst
team. They
probably
sent their scouts to go see him, too.
Yeah, probably.
They knew he was going 1-1, 1-2.
You like where I was going with that? They couldn't pick him if they tried, because if they had the worst record in baseball, even if they had the worst record in baseball, Manfred would be like, nope, spent too much money, 35th overall.
They also wouldn't take any player that hasn't torn their UCL.
That is such a good point.
I don't
think
Jack Caglione would have passed.
I mean, maybe he did. I don't know. I didn't look into it, but I know that he was. I did get it right. Shout out to y'all in the comment section pointing it out.
Oh, was Jack?
Jack was the two-way player, yeah.
Okay.
There was another guy, too, was drafted by the A's. Kurtz, I think it was. I don't know if it was Nick Kurtz. I don't know if that's the same one, but I remember them drafting a guy.
Okay.
Maybe it was Nick Kurtz. That actually sounds really familiar.
There was a player that was ambidextrous. I forgot who it was.
Well, yeah, Schurci.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, he was traded to the Cardinals.
Okay.
For our guy, Brendan Donovan.
Oh, I see.
I mean, there was more in the trade, but...
Yeah, of course, yeah, but those are the Schurci headliners.
Yeah.
But okay, so... I'm going with Schwarber. You're going with Walker, correct?
Yes, I'm going to go with Walker.
Okay, so those are going to be our selections. In the comment section below, after you subscribe and after you like the video and hype the video, almost just important, drop your home run derby predictions. Who's going where? Is Ben Rice going to go deeper into this tournament? Do you think stamina is going to be an issue?
This is a great derby lineup. I agree.
It's a great derby lineup. We got some young talent. We've got some vets, some repeat winners, trying to repeat at least. Drop that in the comment section, who you think is going to win. You can put it in the live chat, but after that, make sure after we're gone to reload in and drop it in the comment so it stays and everyone can see your answer. Drop that in there, subscribe, and like the video. And Jake, I want to hit a widget before I go.
A widget? Weirdo.
It's called a widget.
Nope, it's not. It's a sound.
We are powering down for the All-Star break.
Windows error.
Yep.
Yep.
I like the video.
Like it.
Highly regarded.